Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, social critic, and mentor. Navigating the messy art of living and the complex beauty of relationships through these conversations that we need to have, but we often shy away from. It's another Tuesday, Elizabeth. Where are we off today? And welcome back.
Thank you, Brad. I'm still just trying to, I had to find my chair in order to start today.
Yes, I know you did. You know, usually I'm pretty on top of that, but then I found that I was actually sitting in the chair
today.
That's
right. So. You know how it is when you walk into a place that is very familiar to you, and then my chair was missing, and then I started to get a little anxious, like I don't know how I fit in this space. And now that I have my chair, I see you, and I'm starting to kind of find my feet underneath me.
I totally get it. And by the way, you don't know this, but I frequently have been the guy that runs around going, where is Elizabeth's chair? And I'm kind of ashamed. I'm ashamed to be that guy this week, but welcome back.
You shouldn't be. Thank you. I'm happy to be back. But it actually fits really well into where I'm going today.
And where are we off to today?
Well, you're going to have to be patient because it's a long and winding road, to quote a famous lyric. Because like a lot of people, I'm really grappling with the temperature of our social environment and, you know, a lot of confusion or disappointment, you know, just a lot of feelings in general about where we are right now as a people. And so, you know, my husband and I have been a lot of places this summer. And so it's always great to get the sense of different places in the United States. We started off, we were in New Jersey and New York, and it has its own very special culture and very special feel to it. And the people there I've known since I was little. And when I'm there, I'm a certain kind of person, right? I put on my New Jersey face. And then, you know, when I'm in New York, I put on my New York face. We were in Montana for most of the summer, and I definitely have my Montana face and that Montana experience with the people who inhabit that area. We spent time in Washington State with my daughter, and Tacoma area has a real interesting flavor to it. We drove home this week, and we've stayed in Idaho and then into Utah. In an interestingly timed out way, we ended up being going through Utah last week and then finding our way back here on the Central Coast to the South County, which has its own personality and its own flair and its own way of being. And I have my Central Coast person. Then there's my Cal Poly person, of course. And then there's my Santa Maria person when I'm down, you know, doing things in Santa Maria. My point is that we are a lot of different people in different environments, but we also are a lot of different people in this country. And I would, you know, keep reflecting on this statement that comes up quite often whenever there's a tragedy of some kind, you know, an attack, a hate crime, a murder, an assault, speech that harms others, actions that injure others. And the common refrain seems to be, this is not who we are. We're Americans. We don't behave like this. But if you look over the course of our history, it kind of is who we are. And it is how we behave. And as a country, maybe instead of always deflecting bad things away as an anomaly, not representative of who we are or American values, maybe we need to honestly look at how we are those people, how we are capable of violence and rhetoric that harms and othering of people. Because in the clinical world, my landscape, another place that I inhabit, which also is very divisive and divided in the mental health field. There is not one story that all clinicians follow and believe is the right way to achieve mental wellness. You know that because you're with me every week, and the way I talk about it is mental health is oftentimes flies in the face of other beliefs about mental health and mental wellness. But even in the clinical world, one of the things that we do agree on is that those things that we ignore, those things that we reject about ourselves, those shadow parts of who we are oftentimes the things that keep us stuck, the things that keep us sick or unwell. That when we reject the shadow sides, the dark sides of ourself, or if we only look at the dark side of ourself and we reject those parts of ourselves that are actually positive and loving and kind, any parts of ourselves that we reject oftentimes get us stuck or cause us to harm not just ourselves but others, because we act in ways that don't reflect who we are. That we might say that we're not those kind of people, that that's not the way we behave, and yet we might cut someone off on the freeway or make some sort of snide remark about another person or have our biases about how people live. If we actually sat down and looked at all the ways that our shadow shows up in our life, that darker side, we might start to recognize that, maybe we are those people. And I have, which you would imagine I would, have a different take on how we move forward. Because I don't believe you can legislate kindness. You can't force people to be tolerant. You can't write laws that prevent people from bullying other people. You can't legislate values and beliefs. You can have laws that people will get punished for if they break them, but you can't change the way someone moves through the world and their deep core values and beliefs. You can bury it. You can create a society where people don't say anything, but it doesn't change how they feel. And so then everything is always right under the surface. And so that's a little bit of where I am today, is I have two radical ideas that I'm going to present to you of ways that I think that we get to choose to move forward. If we were going to honestly look at where we are as a culture, because we have a long history of violence towards other nations and toward each other. You know, what makes this decade of human beings or Americans who are inhabiting the country today any different than the Americans who fought in the Civil War? You know, the belief systems, the culture, the values that divided the nation at that time. How are we much different than the nation that lived through the 1950s? Where it looked really good on the surface for all the people who followed along and looked the right way and were part of the scene society, but it wasn't such a great time for everyone else. How are we much different today than we were then? And how much different are we today than the Americans of the 1960s who radicalized the country, the Civil Rights Act passed, the EPA passed, changing access to education for women. How are we much different than those people today? Probably not much different. Just some voices are louder than others, but the beliefs are still there. And so I'm not sure where it is we're trying to get to is one of the problems. If you come into counseling, one of the early things that we talk about is what is it you need to do or what would need to change for you to be okay in your life? What is the vision you have for who it is you want to be? And I don't know if we have that. I don't know if we have an American ideal of who it is we want to be. because it feels like there's many, many different versions of who the ideal American is supposed to be. And one of the big challenges of ever having a United States or an American values or this is who we are comes from the fact that the people who first came here to escape religious persecution and wanted to have the opportunity to worship the God of their choice or the religion of their choice or to live the way that they wanted to live, not being dictated by a king. And so the 13 colonies are founded, but they didn't all want to be together necessarily. Tomorrow's Constitution Day, and if you read a little history about the Constitution, Delaware and Rhode Island, they weren't really excited to join into the idea of the United States because they were afraid that they were going to be dominated by the larger colonies, the larger states that were going to force them to start behaving and following the values of the different colonies. So here we are with 50 different states, with 50 different cultural and social and geographical realities. We don't have a unified public education system. Now, in the 1950s, they tried to have a unified public education system to create what they called the whole citizen, and so that all young people going through school would learn the same history and the same civics and the same math and go through the same reading. They would learn economics, home economics, and they would come out what they called the whole citizen, understanding what it was to be an American. But that public education model did not last very long because in the 1960s, people didn't feel that that public education model really was inclusive of a lot of different values and beliefs. And so that started to crumble. Today, we have 50 states with their own public education systems. It's not mandated by the federal government. And even within the state of California, there is not a unified public education curriculum that every student learns growing up. And the California Department of Education cannot legislate anything that's taught in private schools because of First Amendment rights. So we don't have an education system that can raise our children understanding what it is to be an American or having similar values or feeling like they're part of the United States. And as I mentioned before, if you travel around this country, you find out pretty quickly that each state has a very different lens through which they see the world based on their location, the population of the people, the dominant religious beliefs of that part of the country, who's in power, what the weather is, what they grow, what their economy is like, what access there is for people to have health care, education. It's 50 different little countries. They have very different experiences, who, again, without one understanding of what it is to be an American, continue to feel very threatened by anyone outside of their community. And then the other piece is something that came up today when I ran into a neighbor who was talking about their 24-year-old son who's living in the basement and hasn't been able quite to launch. And parent is very concerned, but in a kind of throwaway comment said, "But what can you do? They're 24. And the clinician in me said, "There's a lot you can do." And therein lies another one of our struggles. We don't have a unified understanding of how it is we need to raise children. Because again, what makes the country so beautiful in a lot of cases, and trying to measure my words, as you can tell, so carefully, is the ability to have the freedom to choose to raise your children the way you want to and to follow the religious or faith beliefs or not that you want to and to live anywhere it is that you want to. Like that is the enticement of it all, is the opportunity for all that freedom. But at the same time, when we throw out any sort of unified anything, we're no longer united. And then we have a lot of really lost people. And so here we are in 2025, where again, you're going to recognize the bane of my existence as the reluctant therapist. A lot of calls for more mental health care, more mental health care. And I will continue saying to you, more mental health care is not going to fix the problems that we have. Because the mental health problems that people are facing are social. They're not biological. Prove me wrong, but they're not. There is some chemical reactions and changes that happen to someone when they're going through mental health crises. But the majority of what we experience are social issues, because people don't do well without structure, because people don't do well without boundaries, because people don't do well without a plan. That's why children who are in school or preschools tend to have better behavioral experiences than kids who have no structure, because we do well when we know what the expectations are and what the plan is, and that we have a place that we're supposed to be, or we have responsibilities to things or people other than ourselves. And so the other piece of this story is that if we had a unified parenting belief system, ideally authoritative parenting, not authoritarian and not permissive and not free range and not the F it all parenting, which is very popular today, but an authoritative style of parenting that takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of investment by parents, but across the board. For decades, since the 1960s, when Diana Bomrand first started talking about authoritative parenting, across the board, economically, socially, geographically, whatever the cultural background is, across the board, children who grow up in authoritative homes have far better outcomes and less mental health issues than children who grow up in homes without a plan, or that are too oppressive or too permissive. So I'm not really sure where the conversation goes today, but these are the things that I'm thinking about. That what about having a unified public education system, becoming a bit monocultured in the expectations of what it is to be an American, so that when people do assault someone or murder someone or attack someone, that we can actually say, no, that's not who we are as Americans, because we have one American cultural story that we're living out. I don't know if that's possible. Because that flies in the face of what we think we're trying to do, is have a wide-ranging freedom of expression. But I would argue, look where the wide-ranging freedom of expression has gotten us. I don't know if this is great. I don't know from a mental health perspective if all of the freedoms to just be are paying off, because there's a lot of people who are drifting and listless and isolated, and a lot of people who would do much better if there was a plan that they had to follow. What if we had a universal parenting expectation? What if we had a universal expectation that all young people 18 to 28 would perform some sort of service to this country to unite this cohort so that they know each other? That you work side by side with someone who grew up in Missouri or in Georgia, and you have a common cause that you're working towards, whether it's, you know, building trails or working to help voter registration or, you know, some sort of national service. What if we had that? Because those are things we haven't tried. And the things that we are doing or not doing aren't really getting us, I think, where we hope we are ideally. Because again, every time someone says, this is not who we are Americans, we don't do this, I just think, but yeah, it is. So that's where I am today. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you are, yes, invited to be part of the conversation. I can see Brad is almost jumping out of his chair. He has so many things he wants to share, so yay. But please do share your thoughts, because these are just mine, kind of rumbling around in my head after many days on the road and a summer living out of the state and kind of coming back into the space. Love to hear how you're doing. You can give us a call at 805-781-3875. give you a chance to write it down. Our number is 805-781-3875. You can also be part of the conversation after the show if you want to send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. I'm happy to engage there. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram. You can leave me messages there as well. But as always, I'm glad you're here. I'm looking forward to seeing where the next 45 minutes takes us. We're going to take a quick break and come back and start continuing this conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking. Time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war, and poverty. Wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and that song is almost 50 years old. So the story hasn't changed much during my walk on the planet, the things that we're concerned about, and it seems to always go back to this root place of how we raise our children with the values and beliefs that we hold is going to create the future. And we have to have a really strong vision of what it is we want in order to change the direction. Because our free-for-all, everybody do your own thing, let's just let everyone live in peace, doesn't work. It's not defined enough. But that's just my thought. Our number is 805-781-3875 to be part of the conversation. Have you missed me?
I have missed you. I have missed you, and I have to tell you, over the last week, I was saying, man, I am going to be so glad when Elizabeth is back underneath our roof, because it helps me to give voice to a lot of the things that are rumbling around in my head, too. Because you and I are roughly the same age. We grew up, and maybe our experiences and some of our values are the same, and maybe some of them aren't, but increasingly, I grew up in a time that we grew up in a time that was very turbulent, obviously, with the Kennedys and Martin Luther King and everything else. But the one thing we, at least in my experience as a public school kid, was I was taught that we're trying to bring everybody together, you know, and I grew up around that, listening to the folk songs of Woody Guthrie and wanting to have kumbaya with all of the people and reach across the aisle to people who were not like me, because we're all the same. It's what drew me here. But increasingly, you see that, you know, we are now in that minority in my experience, and that makes me very, very sad, to be frank with you.
I appreciate that, and I wonder about, you know, because we both went to California public schools. At a time where California public schools were some of the best in the nation, had a pretty uniformed curriculum. Also, parenting was pretty steady, either an authoritarian family, do as I say, not as I do, hear the rules, and if you disobey, you get punished. And then the authoritative parenting was starting to come in, as I said, in the 1960s, where this idea of, yes, I have strong expectations for you as a parent, but I also have empathy and want to develop your, you know, feelings based, your emotional EQ as well. And so we grew up with this, but that has changed. And also, you know, the population has changed. There are more people. And that's the other thing that I experienced kind of driving, you know, all around the country and traveling this summer, is that the more distance there is between me and other people, the more calm everything seems to be. And yet, in some of the most highly dense populated areas in the world, you see the highest levels of satisfaction, family unity. And I think the difference is because there is a unified understanding of what everybody is doing. And if you want to have a community where everyone can do their own thing, then space becomes a little more important. But I'm not sure. We have a call.
We do. I had not had a chance to.
We're not sure who it's going to be.
Yeah. So if you'd like, I'd be more than happy to do that for you, or we can.
Let's just take a chance.
Well, you know, have at it. He's ready to go.
All right. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You're on the air. Who is this?
This is Gus.
Hello, Gus. How are you today?
I'm well. I'm just wondering. It sounds like you're saying that. We should all, as a whole country, have the same school curriculum. And
yes.
If we can't do that, maybe we need to be 50 different countries.
I think that's what I said. And it's funny hearing someone else say it back to me because, again, I'm never 100% sure if it's going to work or why it's bad or why it's good. But yes, it feels like we have to find something that either unifies us so that we can say that's not who we are or this is who we are. Because it's interesting. We can say that's not who we are, but how do we ever define who we are? And I think that's where unified curriculum of schools, you know, that whole citizen idea might be monoculturing us, but at least it gives us a unified goal. What do you think? I mean, does either one of those hit you?
Yeah, it makes sense. It kind of comes back to is it nurture or nature? Was this learned behavior? Do we want to be, in a monoculture? Do we kind of always naturally move away from people that aren't like us, whether they act like us or look like us or speak our language?
Well, I don't know if that would ever be the outcome of it, because maybe there's a maybe there's a curriculum that is still inclusive, because one of the things that we do value, maybe that's what we have to do, is write down the values that we do share. And one of the values that we probably do share is this appreciation for diverse ideas and culture and language and background. And maybe that becomes part of the universal curriculum.
Yeah, I'd like that. I'd go for that.
Because I don't believe that that's probably part of the curriculum in other parts of the country. Because as I said before, we don't have a standardized national curriculum. So what children learn in Utah or Mississippi or Massachusetts or New Jersey could be far different than they're learning in California or Florida. And so that's why I keep thinking that there's got to be something that unifies all these experiences.
Yeah, it makes you wonder what the Founding Fathers had in mind.
Well, my understanding is that they only thought that those of wealth and owned land would be educated and make the decisions for everyone else.
Yeah, and it was probably uniform curriculum across that demographic at the time.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of having a national parenting initiative?
Like for parents, resources for parents, education and planning, things like that.
Yeah, some sort of national parenting initiative based around authoritative parenting to teach that skill set so that we have a unified way of having expectations for young people. And maybe the school curriculum is one piece, but if parents utilize the tools and resources to raise children so that they have more sense of resilience and expectations, you know, and guidance, that we'll have less children ending up living in the basement or spending their day, you know, playing video games, that there's more productivity. Could you stand behind that national initiative?
Absolutely. Yes. Well, if it was the way you describe it, the problem is, as soon as that gets on the discussion level, you know, the people with agendas come in and it becomes politicized.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be really difficult to do it the way you describe it, such a simple, positive way.
Mm. Or we are 50 different countries, and
yeah.
And we just respect that. Maybe I need to use my passport to get into Utah.
Wow.
I don't know.
That'd be interesting. Of course, there's the argument there. California has such a dominant economy in the world that California should probably come up.
Oh,
many things.
I lost you a little bit. Californians would what?
Some states would fare better than others. California has a healthy economy in the world. Mm-hmm. That probably would help them.
Well,
and
what's interesting about California is there are more religious organizations in the state of California than anywhere else in the world, not just the United States, but in the world. California is incredibly diverse from community to community throughout the state. So the idea that there'd be a monocultured style of parenting or a curriculum might be really challenging if you're going to build that, right, taking into consideration the depth of diversity that's here in the state.
Wow. I had no idea.
I'm countering my own argument. But anything else that's on your mind, Gus?
Thank you for letting me talk to you.
All right. Thanks for calling in. Thank you. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875 to be part of the conversation. So there's other thoughts that I have along the lines of why we need to have some sort of more unified understanding of what our goals are as a country. Because right now, I think we tend to look at over the shiny object that's in front of us and point to that as the problem. And right now it's social media. There's, you know, especially in the last week, everyone is up in arms. Social media keeps pushing these, you know, messages and these memes, and the algorithms keep pushing to people, you know, messages and information that just keep affirming what it is they already believe. And all of that is true. Social media is giant in our culture. A lot of people participate, just like video games and children. There's a lot of children that are addicted to video gaming and spend hours and hours and days upon days playing their video games. But I don't think that social media, I don't think that video games are the culprit in our ongoing cultural war that we have within the country. I don't think that it's just the idea that people are in their silo getting, you know, information on social media that causes this kind of violence, because we've always had some sort of messenger, right? If people go to the same church week after week, they're getting the messages of that church continuously, whatever that religion or faith or belief is. If, you know, before we had Rush Limbaugh and Fox News started in the 1980s that were creating, you know, this story that was fed to the populace, and you could go right to that network and get one source of information. So we've always had opportunities for people to break off into their factions and just get their news that way. So I don't know if social media, again, is our primary enemy. I don't think that it's that simple. 805-781-3875 is our number. And Sean, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Well, I don't know if you stole my thunder. I didn't hear the whole
comment.
Oh, did
I? I don't want to steal your thunder, Sean. Tell me what's on your mind.
Well, we came from a place, we went through this incredible sociological experiment where we come from a place where, when I grew up, there were three networks, right? Mm-hmm. ABC, NBC, CBS. And even if you got your news from the newspaper or local news, the news was still the same.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
We could argue about why we were in Vietnam or if it was a good or bad, but we weren't arguing about, hey, it was the Chinese that started. No, it was the Arabs. No, it was Bill down the street. No, it was a conspiracy by the CDC. You know, the population is not wired to be able to sort and vet endless data.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
true.
Back in the day, there were editors of these news organizations, and so everybody was on the same page every day, literally as well as figuratively. We knew what to argue about because the information was at least factual the vast majority of the time. Now anything goes, and we have not really and I'd love for you to do a whole show on this, anybody to do a whole show on this, we have not come to grasp with psychopaths. We have not understood these charming, charismatic actors. There's a great article, top eight profession of psychopaths, journalists, politicians, surgeons. These are not people with chainsaws. They're people with briefcases. And they are controlling a lot of the information that is disseminating right now. And it's frightening because the people are not equipped to vet it.
No. But yeah. Well, what do you think of my idea, Sean, of having a unified national curriculum for education and for child rearing?
Well, it got me thinking about something different. Not that I am opposed to that. I think that it's kind of unworkable because of the cultural fracturing that we've gotten. But it did occur to me that it would be great to have a national referendum of asking people, what do you want? Mm-hmm. You know, if you want the border controlled, great, I want the border controlled. Then it's a discussion about what we do, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, all the way from, okay, do you support the Second Amendment? Do you want your neighbor to have a thermonuclear weapon? So, okay, if not, then where is the line? Mm-hmm. And yes, I totally, completely agree with you that we are without a map. Mm-hmm. There's nothing unified about what we're doing.
Hey, Sean, it's Brad. Yeah. It's Brad here on the panel. And I just wanted, because I think you may be aware of this, but do you remember we used to have something called the Fairness Doctrine? Remember?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that meant that, you know, if you were going to present one side of a story, that you were mandated to present another viewpoint as well. And they did away, when they did away with the Fairness Doctrine, mm-hmm. that is when the powers that be that eventually brought us people like Rush Limbaugh and so forth were able to present one side of a discussion, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And and so I think, for my understanding of all of this, that's really where it started, was when we lost the Fairness Doctrine.
Mm. Well, I hate to say this because it's going to be partisan on a show that isn't political, but there are factions that do not want democracy to succeed. And so it's very difficult to run a unified culture, much less a democracy, if you've got a part of the culture that's absolutely against any unity. And I don't think it's the people necessarily that don't want the unity. But the people with all the money and the power at the top certainly don't want us to unify.
Thank you. Yeah, Sean, I appreciate that, because that's why when I was thinking through this topic, to me it comes back to the only way we change it is generationally. And so mm-hmm. we have to start with educating children and raising them differently, because we're not going to change any adult's mind at this point.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I think one of the things really, really important that we can do is teach kids to media literacy, first of all. Mm-hmm. And I came up with an idea where you divide a class in half and you teach one half of it complete BS and the other half the truth, and you let the BS half feel what it feels like to experience cognitive dissonance, mm-hmm. to argue passionately for something and then be proven wrong, mm-hmm. because I think they think twice, perhaps, mm-hmm. before mm-hmm. they put forth ideas that they're just absolutely sure that this is correct, because you might not be. You know?
Yes. The rigor of analytical thought, which, again, it'll be a whole nother show we do, because we need to talk about AI in the classroom and talk about moving towards a monoculture. If AI is the source of education in this country, then we better have a discussion about what our goals are as a people. And as you said, we don't have a map. And without a map, you are subject to become... Right?
Lost.
Lost. Thank you, Sean, for taking the time to call. I appreciate your thoughts.
Thank you so much.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. We just blew through our halfway point, but I'm glad the conversation is rolling. We are talking about kind of where we are. And I started the conversation today saying, when we say that's not who we are, when horrible things happen, when there is a moment of crisis in this country and people say, this is not who we are, we're Americans, I'm pushing back and saying, maybe it is who we are. And maybe we need to actually define what it is to be an American so that we can say when something is or is not who we are. And maybe that's the conversation that helps us move forward. We're going to take a quick break and come back and continue our conversation. Our number is 805-781-3875. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. On down. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. Before I go to my next note, Brad, I want to go back to the fairness doctrine.
Okay.
Some would argue that our news is not part of the two-sided story. I'm careful with my words of what I'm saying right now. Right, but there's a lot of pointing of fingers that there's a lot of one-sided news that people are receiving, and then they go to that news. But is there any place that there's which you would consider news that meets the old standard of the fairness doctrine?
You know, without at the risk of sounding partisan in my own way, okay, mm-hmm. I believe that public radio, NPR, in reaction to criticism of its coverage, I think it's done a great job of trying to bring both sides. You know, when listening to NPR news can raise my blood pressure by listening to what they say, that means that they're presenting inconvenient facts or inconvenient attitudes and, mm-hmm. and viewpoints to me. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to find, and they're not doing it by labeling people with demonology labels. Mm-hmm. They're just presenting other voices that we might not go to hear as well, mm-hmm. which, given the closed nature of many media ecosystems, and that's really all I'll say, is a good thing. So is there room for improvement? Absolutely. But I think overall, public radio, NPR, has done the work that it needs to do. The problem is, for some people, once you are labeled as the enemy, there's nothing you can do because they're never going to change their mind. Yeah. And that's the sad part for me.
Thank you. And that's why I kind of keep going back to this idea that the 50 states, the 50 countries, that we're not, since Sean brought this up, you know, we're not wired as human beings to be able to take in as much information as we are fed constantly. And if we want to talk about mental health issues and people, you know, being too swamped with news and it makes them shut down or break down, that's a really important piece of this. Like, we're not wired to know about a bus accident in Pakistan and be able to deal with the tragedy of lost lives. We're really only wired to be able to handle the news that covers our community that's around us, that we can reach out and care for a neighbor whose house might burn down or what's happening in our school district. And that kind of goes back to my idea of this unifying curriculum or the unified parenting expectations. If all parents were taught this authoritative style of parenting, which, you know, holds children accountable and helps develop resilience, these very common skill sets. And so we're not asking people to have similar goals or values or beliefs, but we're saying, let's hold our children and our child rearing to a certain standard so that we have to, you know, at some point say, I've raised a child who can take criticism and that can hear something that causes dissonance and not respond in a way that is violent or threatening or feeling attacked, but they can, you know, you have to teach those skills. And we don't have a mechanism for teaching those skills of discourse and communication, because we're not going to be able to, as I said before, legislate tolerance. You can't pass laws that cause people to be kind or to change their beliefs and values. What you can do, though, is create an environment where people learn to cope with and deal with things that are uncomfortable without feeling attacked or threatened. The other piece is that we also have to accept, and this is, you know, shaky ground, we have to accept that our culture, our institutions may not be able to address the needs of every person. That if we look at the collective good, trying to work for the better of the whole, is not going to address every single person's special needs, right? That there's some things that are just our cross to bear as human beings, whether it's a disability or a, you know, chronic illness or a trauma or a challenge or a death or a transition. Like, there's things that happen in our lives that as human beings we can't control. And to expect that the culture institutions are going to be able to grab everyone in and make sure everyone has the same, I think that gets us into trouble as well. That in some ways we might have to be willing to say, here is our collective good. Here's what we're working towards. Clean water, clean air, housing, access to healthy food, access to the outdoors. Like we had a model of these 10 things that we all could agree on, that I think across the board, right? Access to gathering as a community, the ability to, you know, enjoy outdoor spaces. We had these 10 things. Everything else then is your personal belief and value system, your religion or your family culture. But as a country, as Americans, we'd have to agree on these 10 things. But these 10 things may not then be able to care for every single person's strife.
You know, Elizabeth, I think we got pretty close in the 70s when we were working on clean air and clean water. And then mm-hmm. there was a lot of talk about the Equal Rights Amendment and mm-hmm. so forth. But what we saw was a very dedicated opposition to clean air and clean water, guised in the cloak of jobs mm-hmm. fed to us by corporations. And they played a very, very good long game, very long game. And I think that's one of the things that I struggle with now, because back in those days, I was so hopeful that we were going to do the right thing by all of us as a people. But in the years ever since the election in 1980, we'll say, of the Reagan era, we've just seen a long, long game to reverse all of that. And I think we're now that plus all of the technology that's been unleashed on our children, and some things that people can't understand for a very small group of people that we're starting to see emerge in our younger population, that people just can't handle it. And this is where we are.
I appreciate your thoughts. I respect them. Our number is 805-781-3875 to be part of the conversation. I am Elizabeth Barrett. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm going to pop that in there, and I'm going to say this. There have been other times throughout history where we've had moments of there. I mean, if you look at the turn of the 20th century, and there was the it's the progressive era, it was called. And there was a really strong movement towards getting kids out into open space and getting women out of corsets. And people were sent up to the farms to work with their hands and get back to nature. Like, we've had this is, you know, the 1970s were not the only time. And the only reason I'm saying that is because I want to set up this picture that we've rolled around different ideologies throughout our history, you know. So we had that moment of time. the progressive era. And at the same time, we also had the rise of the eugenics movement, right. which was this idea that we were going to create one, you know, perfect human being, and we were going to eradicate all the genes that cause disease in people. And of course, we see where that led to, you know, the idea of the perfect white race. So eugenics had its moment of this might be good for all humankind, and then it turned sour. You know, we had the back to nature movement in the early 1900s, and again in the late 1950s with Silent Spring, and then that kind of led. We've had this, but I think what's missed all the way along is, and again, I always get anxious when we think of, well, the corporations did this or this election did this. Like, I mean, I can see through lines of how we get into trouble now, but I think the overarching problem or issue is that we've continued to lack any sort of unified understanding of who we are as a country. And if the only thing we can agree on is that we have free market capitalism, if that's the only thing that keeps going back to, it's like, well, we can't have clean air, you know, acts that prevent companies and corporations from making money. Then let's own that. Then, you know, the clinician in me says, okay, let's not fight that anymore. If that's really what we're all about is, you know, the opportunity for making a fortune, then people who, you know, come to this country who want to be part of the American dream, they're coming here because they want to have equal access to starting a business and making their fortune or whatever that is. And so maybe I have too lofty of a thought that we have this universal curriculum that teaches the whole citizen, and we teach citizenship, and we teach speech and debate and communication and home economics, and our children leave school with the capacity to deal with complex things. And maybe I'm a Pollyanna thinking that we all follow this authoritative parenting model, which I want to side note why it's so important to me too. Because, and we're going to talk about this the next couple of weeks, but there was a giant study that Stanford University did recently about ADHD. And, you know, we continue to have large swaths of our population diagnosed with ADHD. And now it's a big thing to have adults diagnosed with ADHD. And that's, again, another show. But in this study, what they found, one of the concerns was that children who are diagnosed with ADHD, the recommendation is to wait 6 months or more before putting children on any sort of medication, because they found that with good behavioral modification within the family system, these kids start to really thrive. And they described what the behavioral efforts were that had such great success. And it was an authoritative parenting model, word for word, that they were prescribing to families to train the parents how to do to help their children be able to function and, you know, thrive. And then after that 6 months or so period of time, if the kids were still struggling, then they would revisit the idea of maybe using medication. But in great numbers, once you had children and families and parents with a plan, with an understanding of what their goals are as parents, where they're, what they're trying to do, because if you don't know where your kids are supposed to end up, you can't parent with any sort of confidence. And so that's what kept that reading that study just kept ringing in my head this week. It's like, that seems to be the ding, 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 ding thing that brings us all together. If we raise our children with the same sense of expectations, empathy, boundaries, resilience, that you start then in a generation or two having these common experiences. Maybe not the same values or beliefs or different religions, but that core expectation of how we are to behave as human beings starts to bring about some sort of concentrated unity. And I felt more empowered when I look at a giant study into ADHD at Stanford that continues to point back to this style of parenting that, again, has been around since the 60s and has proven to be so successful. So I'd be willing to start there. Let's have a national conversation about how it is we parent our children. Let's not try to say that we're all going to have the same belief systems. Let's toy with the idea of some sort of national curriculum, maybe about civics and and discourse and debate. Maybe that also needs to be part of that conversation. And to look at the smaller community efforts and not try to be changing things at a national level, but to really focus on the community, the betterment of the community. And when communities can start to really feel connected and whole, maybe that's the building block, right? You change the way we educate the kids and raise the kids, and then we change the building blocks of community action to larger action. That's just my thoughts, just my idea. And one last thought. There's three things that we can look at: education, parenting, and community. If we focus on those three things and we put time and energy into those three things, we have a lot less time to be on social media. We have a lot less time to be playing video games or to be, you know, wasting time just kind of hanging out. When we have three mission statements as human beings to become as educated as possible, to be the most active and goal-oriented parents as we can be, and to be involved in the communities in which we live and to know the people in our community. If you're busy following those three things, you don't have a lot of time to get wrapped up into conversations that go nowhere. Just a thought. This has been A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com or leave me a note on our Instagram or Facebook page. You can continue being part of the conversation week after week. Every Tuesday at 2, I will be here. But until then, I am so glad that you joined us today. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for supporting this radio station that allows me to sit in my black chair every Tuesday at 2 to talk to you about these issues. Please support our efforts here. And thank you for listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Nothing really is, but things that stay the same, they have to change again. Hello, my old friend. You change your name, but not the way you play pretend. American Requiem. The big ideas, yeah, are buried here, yeah. Amen.
It's a lot of talking going on while I sing my song. Can you hear me? I said, do you hear me? Look at that, look at that now. Look at that, look at that. It's a lot of chatter in here, but let me make myself clear. Can you hear me? Or do you feel me? Taking up space, salty tears beyond my gaze.